This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the first pod of 2015, Rog.
The year of Tottenham Hotspur.
As Frank Lampard said, they will be printing DVDs of that for the next 10 years, no doubt about it. Bad Christmas season for both of our teams.
Bad Christmas season. But wow, what a holiday, David. You look different.
You're referring to my tan? Are you referring to the weight I lost on the South Beach diet, Rog?
I've been on the Sam Allardyce diet.
That's good. It involves not liking bubbles very much.
It involves making love to many, many pies.
Yeah.
You've let your hair grow out.
Yeah, my hair's grown out.
You look a bit like an English mixed disco route.
Yeah, with a massive bald spot in the middle of my head. But I maintain, heard it a few times over the holiday, I am officially now way less bald in person. I do like hearing
it's a relief.
Everywhere. It is a relief.
But where did that tan come from?
It was down in Miami Beach, Rog. It seems we've got quite a lot of GFOPs, including
Crockett and Tubbs.
I now believe we can add it to, although I've got to tell you on the Crockett and Tubbs thing, met an amazing sneaker salesman, went to buy some new Adidas Samoas, loved the Samoas. It's my favourite Adidas sneaker. Went and got some down on Lincoln Road. Young guy, Brandon, helped us out, immediately told me that he's only 20. Like, that was his opening line. I'm only 20. And he says, I really am only working here because I want to be a Miami cop. And I was like, just like in Miami Vice. And he looked at me with this incredibly blank expression. Had never heard of Miami Vice. Had never seen it. No idea what I was talking about.
Wow.
I'm worried about the future of American society. And mostly of Miami crime.
More television, America. Yeah.
Old television.
More bloody television. But you had a bit of an amazing time down there.
Well, lots of GFOPs down there in Miami. Got to do a shout out to all of them who said hi. Biggest GFOP of all, Rog. Jurgi Low, German national team coach, staying at my hotel first night.
You and him, tight now.
Everywhere I went, Jurgi was there. Went to the pool, turned around, Jurgi. Even if I moved my chair every day, Jurgi was always within two chairs.
What does he wear at the pool? I imagine him in a very light blue love hammock.
No, long shorts and a t-shirt. I mean, I would say about Jurgi, I mean, other than the fact that he literally followed me everywhere. Every time I got off an elevator, he was there. Every time the elevator door opened for somebody to get in, it was Jurgi. Everywhere I went, Jurgi.
He may have wanted to punish you for what we said about him during
all
the World Cup.
All of his nose picking during the World Cup.
But I get a feeling if he wanted to punish you, you wouldn't hear it coming.
Okay.
Per Mertesacker would just defenestrate you upon his bidding. He's not the kind of guy that would punch you himself.
I almost got the greatest photograph of all time, which was Jurgi Löw emerging from underwater in a hot tub, Rog. But my camera misfired just at the wrong moment, so I couldn't get that in a call back to the Puma commercial.
Were you on the other side of him? And there was someone else that looked like you on the other side
with a golf club over my shoulder. Yeah, no, so, but he was just everywhere. We exchanged 4 words for the entire trip. Literally saw each other every day. It was becoming embarrassing that we would run
into
each other.
What were the 4 words?
So
ich habe ein lieber Leibewurster. No, I have a living, loving sausage.
On the final day, he got off the elevator next to me and I just said, the door opened on the elevator. He got on and I just said, Guten Morgen. And he said, looked at me rather stunned and just said, Guten Morgen.
No one knows who he is here, which is why all the footballers come to America.
Oh, they love Miami.
My Jurgi Löw interaction, which I had a couple of years ago, and I talked on an early pod about, was walking up Fifth Avenue around 4:30 in an afternoon in a New York winter day. I was walking up. I was actually walking behind four American soccer fans, two of whom were wearing German soccer jerseys.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Jurgi Löw comes walking past his booth the other way. He's wearing a pair of stonewashed jeans.
Was he following you too?
He was. I don't know what he was with, a lovely looking lady. I think they were shopping.
Yeah.
And the two German ersatz German fans didn't even notice him. He walked literally. He kind of like said, "Excuse me, lads." Walked right through these guys. Didn't notice him. And I've slap banged into him. Said hello. Asked him where he got his stonewashed jeans. He's quite a stylish man.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know who is also everywhere from the football manager perspective?
Who?
I was in Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico.
I always love it there.
Did you see Miguel Herrera?
Well, it's hard not to. You get to the airport, you land. There's a huge billboard of Miguel Herrera.
Does he greet everyone individually?
It's the first thing you see. It's like an enormous Miguel Herrera. You drive on the highway from the airport. He's there again. Every 300 yards, huge posters of him.
Wet or dry?
Oh, every variation.
Okay, good.
Vacationing mostly, laid like back. It. He is to Mexico. What Willy Wonka was to the Wonka factory, Dave. He is absolutely. He's the living epitome of the brand. And I love it, love it, love it.
Yeah.
I think we should, by the way, one of my New Year's, not resolutions, but tactical wants, is for you and I to go to Mexico City during the year.
Yeah.
And shoot a shoot an interview with him.
Okay, would love to do that with Miguel Herrera. Better brush up on my Michelle Thomas Spanish DVDs, Rod.
Do you want to know what the highlight of my holiday was?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wasn't crying during Annie. Which
did you
I did
cry
be.
During Annie?
I sobbed.
The new one or the old one?
It's the new one.
Wow.
Which was terrible. But just the scenes of New York soaked with possibility.
Yeah.
Same with Top Five, which it was awesome, which was actually unbelievably good. It reminded me what a magical place we live in, Dave, where everything feels possible. Even bald blokes can make television shows. But even better than that, Dave, Downton Abbey.
Oh, the season premiere, Rod.
Thank
the new
God.
Downton Abbey season. Season 74, I believe we're on.
I needed me some Mrs. Patmore.
Yeah.
Like
you
I need
some.
Air and water.
You got some.
Never enough. Big storyline.
Yeah.
Did love it, Davey.
Are you talking about Molesley's hair?
My Downton Abbey spirit animal.
Molesley.
Not going to go all spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But watching him pioneering early comb-overs and putting boot polish on his bald patch, Wayne Rooney style. And then having Lord Grantham squint at him and declare, "You look very Latin all of a sudden."
Yeah.
Doesn't get any better than that, David.
Yeah, a few major American sports anchors might want to take a look at that, Roger, is all I'm saying.
By the way, it took Lady Edith for all of 7 minutes before she burst into tears.
Oh, poor Lady Edith.
Big question, David.
Yeah.
Why are there no Downton Abbey action figures?
Oh, what a great idea. Are you looking at sort of Action Man, G.I. Joe sized, or more like tiny little sort of model figures?
Well, like the Star Wars sized action figures, so you get in between episodes.
Yeah.
There's very little Downton merch.
Yeah.
And I'd love a Carson.
Yeah.
One that could look me in the eye and I could do my tear yourselves away from your smutty deliberations. That's all this pod is, I realised when he said that, Davo. One smutty deliberation.
It'd be great if he could be a bit like a transformer and he could turn into like a phone booth or something at the same time. That would be a Downton Abbey transformer model.
Oh, I've got to say, him and Mrs. Hughes, their kind of unfulfilled erotic interactions. It's like watching Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho
just
on the
like
sideline.
Like,
just kiss him on the mouth.
It's a love affair, Rog.
Kiss him on the mouth.
Okay, Rog, holiday's over. We've got a packed
back
show.
Back to work.
Yes, we're going to break down the bounty of football that the holidays bestowed upon us, including claims of a campaign against Chelsea, this time in Southampton's surge back into the top four. We'll talk Steven Gerrard's impending departure from Merseyside and America-phobe Frank Lampard's extended stay in Manchester. We'll tend to a raven about Gedeon Zelilem, and we'll welcome Bell and Sebastian lead singer and Scottish League One lover Stuart Murdoch to the pod.
Cannot
we should
wait.
Say, Rod, before we get to the football, very sad about the passing of ESPN, longtime ESPN anchor, ESPN just brilliant broadcaster, Stuart Scott. Worked with him a couple of times, Roger, three times actually, early on 2 Minute Drill, quiz show I used to produce for ESPN, Stump the Schwab, he was the host of that show, another production I was involved in, and The Runner, another production. I would say about him is that, you know, we know suboptimal broadcasting, Roger. You can see it, evidence every Monday night on NBC Sports. The two greatest broadcasters, most skillful broadcasters I've ever worked with are Kenny Mayne from ESPN also and Stuart Scott. You could literally give them a 20-second hard count. You're live on television. You know you've got to get out. You're getting freaked out. The clock is timing down. You've got no chance of getting out. 20 seconds in their ear, they don't react. 15 seconds in their ear, they don't react. 10 seconds, everyone in the control room is freaking out. We're never going to get out. We're never going to get out. With 7 seconds to go, they refer back to something that happened earlier, start heading out to break, fix the camera, tease everything coming up, including stuff that you hadn't even thought about that they had to go and tease, say something brilliant and insightful and funny, and literally get out with 0.01 seconds remaining. He blows me away. He was a brilliant broadcaster, great lover of sport, a great family man. Will be greatly missed, Roger.
Yeah, he's the definition of optimal. He was a man of class, creativity, nobility in suffering, and love. The quote from the ESPYs, "You beat cancer in how you live, why you live, and in the manner in which you live," I think is a creed that many of us are now thinking about, devoted to making the most of every second as he did. In his words, he'd say, "Wow, that was as hardcore as the Wu-Tang Clan on steroids. Our thoughts are with his family, and in particular his two daughters,
yep.
Taylor and Sydney, and we dedicate
lovely girls.
This pod to his memory.
Yeah, absolutely. A brave, brave man. Okay, to the football, Rog. We are 20-38 of the way through the season. That reduces, Rog, to 10-19ths. Can't believe how quickly we've got
it's
to
almost
this point,
over, David.
And on the other side of a strenuous holiday stretch that's re-energized some teams while leaving others beleaguered and blurry-eyed. We're going to talk through the holiday period team by team, Rod. Slightly different format for us. And we're going to discuss how they fared and where they go from here. But first of all, the Guinness, Rog. Got
to
a
the
crack
football.
Open. This lovely. To the football.
To 2015, David. We've got a lovely tweet from at MW Dooley, who said, "At Men in Blazers, I visited the sleep specialist today. She asked, what time do you get up on weekends? His answer was 4 a.m. if Arsenal is playing the early game." A lot of football, David. Before we jump into it,
yeah.
I've got three words with a question mark.
Yeah.
Premier League breakaway. dot, dot, dot.
Premier League breakaway. Unbelievable. Not quite sure this is how I'm prepared to watch football.
Oh, it's the best orgy I've ever been to.
How many orgies have you been to, Rod?
Just that one. it was like an amazing smorgasbord with smoked salmon from Barney Greengrass and verse from Schmidt's House of Sausage in Columbus.
Just like that.
Almost too much, David. I've got to be honest.
Yeah.
It's not really how I like to watch my soccer.
I don't even like highlights, Rog. I've realised that I like the bits when really nothing happens.
Yep.
That's what I most like about football.
You've just described our show.
Yeah,
I mean, to be candid, for me, football is a build-up of moods, a rhythmic ballet in which kind of something magical can erupt out of something unbelievably boring.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, you've got the manager cutaways, the fan shots, the foul throws. I often enjoy those as much as the 35-yard three-kick
wonder strike. An uncalled foul throw, Rog. Oh, I'd love it.
But my big conclusion from watching EPL breakaway, every team is utter crap. And the only thing worse than the football is the referee.
Yeah. That seems to be the one thing that everyone in football agrees on right now, is that the referees get it wrong all of the time.
To be honest, I felt Rebecca Lowe grew into the format as it went on.
Okay.
Many of you were concerned, or expressed your concern to us over Twitter, that you were worried she wasn't being allowed to go to the bathroom enough during the broadcast. But I have to say,
that's why they call it breakaway.
It was very good
of
English football to give her an FA Cup weekend to rejuvenate.
Yeah, it's very true.
Where the only highlight in the FA Cup for me was Wimbledon's man mounting Adebayo Akinfenwa.
Yeah.
Player so large, it was like watching Butterbean retire from boxing and become a soccer player.
Yeah.
In the match programme, Wimbledon played Liverpool.
Yeah.
He did a Q&A.
John Green was there, GFOP.
And if you didn't see this, gentlemen, he's listed as 5'11" and 166 pounds. They must have literally just weighed kind of like from his ankle to the end of his toes. He's an enormous, wonderfully glorious. He's the on EA Sports FIFA, he's the most powerful man.
Yeah,
he says he doesn't play himself in FIFA because he's too bloody slow, was what he said. But he's the strongest guy in the game. In the match programme, he did a Q&A and they asked for his interest outside of football. And he answered, "Go into the gym and Nando's."
No, Nando's chicken. We've got to explain to Americans that Nando's. I don't know, what's the equivalent? It's like
they have
really
Nando's in a couple of cities on the East Coast.
It's a really, really good chicken restaurant.
It is good, is it?
Yeah, it's good.
Well, you can find him there. Liverpool's defenders, honestly, they look like they were literally scared he'd eat them.
Yeah.
The MLS, I know you listen.
And MLS.
Sign him now.
Yeah.
He could play two sports, Bo Jackson style. He could play up front for the New York Red Bulls.
Yeah.
Then double as an offensive lineman for the Jets. He could actually be three sport. He could do the Nathan's hot dog contest. For him, that's just lunch.
And let's face it, he could be here next week. We won't have to wait till summer for him.
Well, we're going
to
be talking about that. Davo, the Premier League race. How tight is it?
It couldn't be tighter.
It's
Rog.
Tight.
Could
it's
not be tighter.
Tighter than an Arsenal jersey.
Yeah, it is.
If the league finished today, there'd have to be a playoff.
Yeah.
Chelsea and City.
Yeah.
Separated only by the alphabet.
Oh, the alphabet. Plenty of letters, though, Rog. At least 10 of them. So let's start with Chelsea, Rog. I'll take a big gulp. The aura of invincibility that surrounded West London has evaporated, Rog. Well, maybe at Brentford it's still there, not at Chelsea. Chelsea now sit level with Man City atop the table. They earn just 7 of a possible 12 points during the holiday period.
I think that's quite a lot.
Well, after having penalty appeals denied in their 5-3 loss to Spurs and a 1-1 draw with Southampton, manager Jose Mourinho now believes that the only logical conclusion is that a campaign against the Blues must be afoot.
This
Rog.
Must be wrong, Dave. Didn't we award them the title several months ago?
Yeah, I think some people did.
The 8-point runaway lead. Where's it gone? It's been like watching the Tour de France and seeing the Peloton reel a breakaway rider back into the
pack. A little bit like that. Except the pack is just one team, Manchester City.
What is going on?
Well, I mean, I think that the... I'll do the negative, first of all. I like to finish with the positive, Rog. I think the negative is Chelsea over the past few seasons, you've seen them lose some weird, weird games. And I think the Newcastle loss, which happened before the break, you sort of looked at that and you thought, that was a slightly weird loss, even though St. James's Park has been a tough place for Chelsea to play. But what you haven't seen them really do, in my memory, is get hammered by one of the top 7 teams. You just haven't seen them. You've seen them lose some tough games. You haven't really seen them hammered. Well, yeah, and then Spurs particularly. That is a big rivalry for Chelsea. It's a bigger rivalry for Chelsea than I think it always is for Spurs. But I think after this victory, Spurs are going to say, this is our biggest rivalry. It's not Arsenal at all. But I think that loss, losing to a big London rival and the manner of the victory. If you said to me before that, it's like, you know what? You'll score 3 goals against Tottenham at home and you'll score 3 goals away. You'd have taken that. To concede 5 goals against one of their big rivals, against one of the big teams in the Premier League, that is a very odd thing for Chelsea to do, Rog.
Particularly because this is a team that had gone 299 minutes of league play without conceding a goal before the Southampton wobble. They exposed what we all knew, Chelsea's back four is susceptible to pace. And they then went and conceded 4 for the first time ever under Mourinho. And even worse, it was 5. It was against Spurs. Yeah. Spurs of Harry Kane. Real Madrid's Harry Kane.
Yeah.
A player who is... He's like watching a little dog that's convinced himself he's a big dog. 17 goals in all competitions this season. Every goal he scores for Spurs just tacks on another €1 million onto his transfer fee. Scored twice in this game. Earned a penalty. Supplied Nasser Chadli, the excellent Nasser Chadli, with the host 5th. What was it like for you watching this? Because for me, it was a little bit like watching Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, it's a game. Look, it hurt. It's not a game I ever want to go and lose. It's one of the big games of the season for me. And unfortunately, Chelsea have had a slightly spotty record against Tottenham the last few years, Rog. And so we've had some frustrating losses there. Nothing like this, though. And it started so well. Chelsea go 1 goal up and you kind of think, OK, here we go. Chelsea are going to win it. I would say that on the positive for it, I think there were some individual performances which you just aren't going to see very often. Gary Cahill had, I think, the worst game I've ever seen him have in football.
Shocking.
And I don't think we're going to see that again. I think that's almost a bit of a Christmas hangover for him. And I think some of the defending in the midfield. I think Chelsea, and this is going to have to be used by Jose Mourinho as a teaching moment, Chelsea are now in a tight, tight horse race for the title. And they're going to have to defend with 11 men, you know, and that's what they've done. That's what Chelsea have been really good at. But I think, you know, even Fabregas has got to work harder on the ball, certainly for that first Harry Kane goal. He had to do a lot more.
Well, let's give Spurs their due. I mean, watching Chadli run rampant, Bentaleb work so hard, and Lloris, for me, I mean, a fascinatingly dominant keeper in a game who is really overshadowed because he's playing at the same time as Courtois and De Gea, who are getting all the press right now. But it was the most shocking thing I've seen this 5-3 on a television screen since Susan Boyle limped onto Britain's Got Talent and belted out I Dream a Dream. Mm-hmm. It was like watching Spurs play because her performance was a thing of beauty emerging from a completely unexpected source. I honestly worried for Spurs fans, David. How would they cope with that new, strange, uncontrollable emotion they were experiencing, the one that's called happiness? And yet that Lampard quote that you did at the top of the show, it's always bad to lose to Tottenham because they make the DVDs for it and sell them for the next 10 years. Which narrative flip was more shocking? That Chelsea let a lead slip, Davo, or that Spurs showed some real spine in this game?
I think that it's more shocking. I think in some ways the Chelsea flip is more shocking But I think the Tottenham thing is actually heartwarming. And the positive that I take out of this actually isn't for Chelsea. It is for Tottenham. It's a team that we both have some affection for.
Absolutely.
I'm saying. It's a team that we... and I think the emergence of Harry Kane is one of the really uplifting, positive stories in the Premier League this season. A homegrown player, a young England player, who actually has not enjoyed great success at the age group levels for England. He's been a slightly dull striker. But I think as he's grown up, he's got a real brain on his head and a great competitive spirit. Not great speed, but as a finisher, it's almost a little, dare I say it, a little Shearer-like, a little Sheringham-like, his ability to go and finish.
Many of our GFOPs have said he looks like Haley Joe Osman, all grown up
a little
in
bit,
Crete.
Yeah.
But for Tottenham, I mean, it could have been six or seven if DeAndre Yedlin was playing.
Yeah, without
Lucky
a doubt.
Lucky Chelsea,
yeah.
The Akron Zip graduate. He got his work permit. He will be arriving in Blighty in January. From a Chelsea perspective, Dave, I think the net effect of counting on the same eight players as the core of that team, it gets to a point where it's not so much tired legs, but it's more tired mind.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, Chelsea are still in four competitions, Rog. They're playing an enormous amount of football. And as you rightly mentioned, they are not rotating that squad a lot. And I think they need some more defenders. You know, it's interesting, the story out there that they're eyeing Micah Richards from Man City. He's a really phenomenal both centre-back and right-back, can play both positions, just the kind of player that Chelsea need. Kurt Zouma getting a run out in the FA Cup, looking like he's going to go and play a little bit more for the rest of the season. They need to rotate more. If they're going to stay alive in these competitions and win some silverware this year, they're going to have to get more out of their fringe players.
Credit John Terry. You don't hear me say that very often. 3 goals in 4 games.
Yeah.
He's Diego Costa without the jazz hands.
Yeah.
But that is a defence that can be undone by sheer pace, and Champions League teams will take note. Jose Mourinho's reaction, we got to talk about it, Davo. For me, it was up there with Jay-Z and the Illuminati, or Barack Obama's birthers, or enemy of the state, Will Smith. He taped the killing. He's a target. There's a conspiracy, Davo. There is a conspiracy against Chelsea from unknown quarters.
I mean, of course, it's ridiculous. I mean, I find any time that the... Yes, there are some legitimate questions about refereeing in the Premier League, and they've been raised by all fans of almost every team in the Premier League. And we've talked before on the pod about the need for the FA and basically other organisations around the world to look at technology. Having said that, the only reasons that managers seem to me to talk about refereeing decisions is not about a public campaign. It's either to specifically try and influence referees in their next games, or it's to try and influence their owners. And I'm sure that Mourinho has to try and sell something to Roman. And I'm sure that he's trying to, believe me, Mourinho is playing a game with referees and with the next opponents to go and do it. I think for it to go into a public sphere of us to sort of believe this is what he really feels, this is what's really going on, I'm not sure that that's true. It's a game they're all playing, Roger.
I think it is clearly the result of something that looks like a campaign, he said. To me, a brilliant political speech that staunches the bleeding and causes a referee a moment the next time a Chelsea player feels gravity a bit too much. He's trying to change the narrative. Well, he might. January 31st, Davo, looms large. Chelsea versus Manchester City.
Huge game.
12:30 p.m.
Yeah, without a doubt, the games between the top teams are going to affect the outcome of the league this year, Rog.
Talking of City.
Yes, City. The classic case of a player linked to MLS spurring a Premier League title surge, Rog. New Year's Eve, City announced NYCFC's Frank Lampard would stay with the club for the duration of the season. The very next day,
what?
He scored the game winner against Sunderland, a goal that ended up drawing City level with Chelsea.
Before we get into Frank, we'll just say about City, they have stalked Chelsea like a polar bear patiently tracking human prey across the Arctic Circle. They haven't had any fit strikers. They've not always been pretty. They never really seem to get out of second gear. No lead safe. But 7 straight wins. A wobble against Burnley. Magnificent wobble from 2-0 up. And an almost replica repeat against Sunderland before they persevered thanks to that Frank Lampard goal, Davo. His 7th goal for City in only 18th games has led to this, Davo. Frank Lampard stays with Manchester City. Kel surprise.
Yeah, should just say about Man City, it wasn't always convincing, but they found a way to get the points, Rog. And as you predicted all the way along, Frank Lampard staying at Manchester City till the end of the season. It sort of ushers in screams of chaos, screams of what is the world coming to from various people within the US soccer sphere, Rog. I think for me, I feel that this is only a benefit to MLS. And I can tell you, as a New York City FC season ticket holder, as a massive, massive Frank Lampard fan, in fact, the only reason I can sort of tolerate what's happened to Chelsea over the break is I actually am so happy about what's happening for Frank Lampard. It's only made Frank Lampard a bigger star, and Frank Lampard is a bigger asset for MLS and for NYCFC when he arrives here. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, the news has touched a nerve in the US. It's kind of, I'm trying to understand where that nerve is. It's a nerve that is near a pressure point. That's a strange combination of naivete, perhaps distorted sense of self, a little touch of self-loathing. I mean, let's talk about Manchester City for a second, because when Fran Soriano came on the pod and said, we want to be New Yorkers, we're building a truly authentic New York team, he said to us back in August, this is not a Manchester City team or a brand play or a marketing trick. This is real. I mean, you have to read those words and think back on that, because this is the one area where I do think there's a bit of kind of disinformation and misinformation. I mean, what we do know is none of this was planned. I mean, City did not know that they would be this troubled this season. And few imagined that when Lampard came over here, he'd still be this good. And few understood.
Even Man City didn't realise how good Frank Lampard was.
Few understood that he'd be so nose out of joint after being canned by Chelsea, which we picked when we spent the afternoon with him. I mean, that was my big takeaway. He was still in shock at how his 13 seasons at Chelsea had just kind of come to an end. And it's a complex situation. He was considered to be a spent force in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He told us that he was going back to City to regain his match fitness because he'd not trained in so long. He admitted to us how unfit he felt. And you joked that he wouldn't even be able to make the bench and we'd hardly ever see him in a City shirt. And he nodded and agreed with that. But what he's done, he's kind of conjured muscle memory reinforced by that potent desire to prove Chelsea were wrong to get rid of his services. When we were with him, he seemed desperately sad to have been let go still. And all of these three things have conspired together, coupled with the fact that Yaya Toure, with a host of other Premier League stars, is off to Equatorial Guinea from January the 17th to the February the 8th. He could miss up to 4 Premier League games. And it meant that City's wobbling title chase, and it was wobbling in September, desperately needed this kind of rejuvenated Frank Lampard to bolster it. And once you realise that, there was no chance he was coming here. Anyone who understands how economics work and commercial possibility work in world football know that Manchester City see winning the title as objective 1, 2, and 3, and building a second brand in MLS as a kind of nice second or third tier priority.
The only thing I disagree with you there, and I agree with everything you just said, other than I don't think he was desperately sad when we saw him this summer. I actually think he is genuinely, truly excited to come to the United States and go and continue his career with NYCFC. But as he said during that interview, he is a competitive person. He loves to compete. In fact, Frank Lampard has never been gifted with supreme skill by his own admission and talent. He is just incredibly competitive. He's a very, very bright footballer. And I think he's finding himself in this competitive situation. And it is a chance to prove himself to all the people in England, from his West Ham days all the way through his Chelsea days, who've disrespected and sort of ignored his qualities as an athlete and as a footballer, considering his amazing appearance record and his amazing goal scoring, amazing assist record. It's a chance to prove everybody wrong, and he's competitive and he's managed to do it, and it's hard not to be happy for him. And to all of the disingenuous people who cover American soccer, who continue to write this whole thing about, oh, now we've all been let down and NYCFC has been let down and it's just now we can't have this idea that it's a farm team. Just go back and read the pieces that they were writing when Frank Lampard was announced as an NYCFC player. No one was that excited then. Now the world is going to be really excited to see Frank Lampard and probably Steven Gerrard come and play against each other in the MLS. It's going to be massive. These are good times.
I mean, it has been fascinating to see how the British public have laughed at our media going on English television to talk about how big a diss this is to MLS.
Although you could say, Rog, that long term, this actually is the best thing possible for NYCFC, because they have a way more valuable and proven and battle-hardened, frankly, Frank Lampard.
Yeah, but if he comes, Dave, I mean, Pellegrini was asked if he'll never end up in New York, and he said he can't or won't answer that one. But Manchester City, they want this MLS brand to work for commercial reasons, but it is a rounding error on their bottom line compared to the global significance of winning the Premier League for their fans, for their sponsors, which is always going to be their organisation's prime directive. I mean, I'd say for City, I think they need to think more about how they are embarking on this strategy. It's a fascinatingly creative one. The Melbourne team in Australia, the New York team here. I think making the jersey a Manchester City direct replica was a misfire. This Lampard thing was a negative, but not the death blow that many people are saying. I mean, I feel terrible for the Third Rail, the supporters group, who said they may, you know, Frank Lampard phoned me up to sell me a season ticket. Now he's not going to be playing. But what this has done, this Frank Lampard kind of pulling him out of NYCFC, I think it makes it clear that you do have to believe in the greater Manchester City mission to cheer for New York City FC with a real understanding. Because they're going to do this again. If a great young kid comes over here, plays really well, they'll yank him and start to play him in England in a heartbeat. So with that replica City jersey and with City poaching NYCFC's best players at will, they have kind of set this up from the outset to be City's AAA affiliate.
You know, until you said that a couple of minutes ago, I'd never even considered for a second that Frank Lampard may never come to NYCFC. I mean, that would be absolutely stunning and shocking to me, and something really worth thinking about. I'm not even prepared for that, Roger.
I mean, I will say Paul Carr tweeted that Frank Lampard's five goals have earned City 5 points. The draw versus Chelsea, wins versus Leicester and Sunderland. He is a table changer for that team. It does crack me up that Frank Lampard's New York City FC highlights video, maybe just his interview with us in New York City.
Yeah.
But if I was MLS, I'd just put out a press release thanking Frank Lampard for his service and just claim that they have resuscitated the career of a legend.
Oh, I still believe he'll be here this summer, but that may just be blind faith. Rog, okay, Manchester United. Rog, the red side of Manchester, after six straight wins, Louis van Gaal's side, they stumbled through the holiday period, Rog, winning just once in four games. Looking at things optimistically, they've not lost since November the 2nd and sit third, but they're 9 points adrift of Chelsea and City. Hard to see them bridging that gap, Rog.
Well, one of the joys of the holiday period for me, Dave, was watching Louis van Gaal walk out onto the field against Stoke, survey the pitch at the Britannia, and realise it was even more primitive than Doodstil outside of Groningen.
Yeah, Groningen.
It was grim to watch United, almost always.
Yeah.
The only highlight of their game against Stoke was the unveiling of the new NBC Sports scoreboard, which takes up the top third of the screen.
Yeah.
I did like that Van Gaal, he does seem to have got himself a new toupee for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent New Year railing against the idiocy of the packed English football schedule, suggesting that the holiday period is terrible for the players and for football. He's probably not wrong. The only time I saw him smile all month was when he did an interview with English television. And he'd said, "I'm a fairly flexible man." I can't do his accent. And he then paused, revealed a set of yellowing dentures and said, "And my wife, she knows that."
Oh,
sometimes I think Van Gaal is just a Sacha Baron Cohen character. That was one of those times.
Yeah, the only other positive thing for them, Falcao scored a couple of goals with beautiful hair, Rog, and notched in a couple of goals as well.
Yeah, I mean, the progress is positive, but it's in a two-step forward, one-step back kind of fashion. Two away wins in 14 games. One amazing stat over the holidays, United unfurled their first unchanged starting 11 in 85 games.
Big news.
There's still a mystery wrapped in a Dutch enigma, the defence kind of experimentation and alchemy. They're flicking between three at the back and the traditional four. They've had 25 different defensive combinations and they've only played 20 games. And now they've got Di Maria back. Everyone's trying to work out how is he going to fit him. That sharpened wonder from the beginning of the season, in with Falcao and RVP, and retain Rooney in the deep role. The lovely story from United over the holiday was David De Gea, who compared his development from skinny youngster to unbelievable goalkeeper at United to that of Captain America's physical transformation.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Love that, because mine was more a transformation from a skinny youngster into a bald Clark Kent.
It happens, Rog. Clark Kent's a good-looking man also, though. Don't forget that. Liverpool, Rog, 8 points out of a possible 12 over the holiday period. But an emotional roller coaster of a season throbs on. Liverpool started the holiday stretch by stealing a point against Arsenal, courtesy of a 97th-minute Martin Skrtel header, Rog. And after beating Burnley and Swansea, they went 2-0 up against lowly Leicester, Rog, only to allow the Foxes to fight back and earn a draw. The real nadir would come just hours after that game when the media revealed that Liverpool legend Steven Gerrard, Rog, will depart at the end of the season, and it appears for MLS and it appears for the LA Galaxy, Rog.
Yep. Or as I like to say, Steven Gerrard is a latest aging star to test MLS's magical restorative waters. They're like the fountains of youth. The instant he signs for the Galaxy,
yeah,
his fading powers will be fully restored, David.
Yeah.
It's like Tiacote in Mexico. Can cure every ailment.
Do you believe that Steven Gerrard will ever come to America and play in MLS, Rog?
Yes.
That's good. Okay.
I think, what a man, though, David.
Yeah.
Let's talk about him. 17 seasons,
yeah.
695 games, 180 goals, 10 trophies, including one fairy tale Champions League night in Istanbul.
Amazing.
Perhaps more unique than any of the above, Dave. He was a man who embodied the club he represented all that time. Turned down chances to move to Chelsea.
Yeah.
And if you believe rumours, Bayern Munich, to stay at Liverpool and try and drag them back to the top of the Premier League table.
He almost did.
So yeah, it was like, but it's been like watching Sisyphus, Dave. I mean, the thing I feel saddest about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, is that Americans who are recent converts to football, they never really saw him at his best. They only know Lion in Winter Stevie G, not the world-class player who enforced his will on every game and wrote, I love this quote, in his 2007 autobiography that seeing the opposition with the ball makes me sick.
Yeah. Remember Euro 2000, Rog, that tackle on Didi Haman made him cry like a girl, I think he said at the time. I mean, the thing about Gerrard and Lampard, to some extent, they're very interesting guys, come around the same time in football, and different players. Gerrard, more naturally gifted, I would say, as a footballer. Lampard, perhaps, a bit more versatile as a footballer, even though Gerrard played a bunch of different positions as well. But these are both supreme professionals, Rog. And this is why I think, ultimately, imagining that Lampard is coming here, they're both great for MLS. These are more than just world-class footballers. These are more than great football players. They are supreme, supreme professionals. And that's what's really defined their careers. And it's why they lasted so long. Gerrard, a one-club man. Lampard, obviously started at West Ham, is now doing so well at Manchester City, but really stayed at Chelsea for years and years and years and years and years. And genuine, genuine professionals. And that's almost a throwback, Rog, to a different era in professional sport. Not many people ever did this before.
Oh, I agree.
And we're not going to see many pros like them in the future.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you think about Stevie G, and he was a divisive figure, he was a true club anchor. And I think the fact that he's leaving Liverpool in kind of turbulent waters is probably a little disquieting for Liverpool fans. Jamie Carragher, great tweet.
Yeah.
He said, leaving or retiring is a great confidence booster. This morning, my Twitter timeline was full of, why is Stevie Gerrard starting? Now it's all, oh, Gerrard, he's the best. He's the best ever. If I were a Liverpool fan and was looking at that squad, I'd be wondering, who are the leadership voices who are going to replace Stevie G? But the Stevie G would be the first to point out, many predicted doom for Genesis when Peter Gabriel quit the band.
Yeah.
But it freed up room for Stevie G's favourite pop star, Mr. Phillip Collins, to step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, just maybe, Stevie G's retirement will do the same.
Is the Phil Collins of Liverpool, though, Rod?
Oh, Adam Lallana.
Really?
God bless. Su Studio, Adam Lallana.
Yeah.
I feel for him, Dave. I mean, to have dreamed about bringing a title to Liverpool Football Club as a local lad, to have come so close last season, and to have literally fallen and not been able to get up and see your joy turn to ashes in your mouth. I can't imagine how that must feel for a human being.
Small observation is that you always feel most for people who've actually had spectacular lives. Lives that our lives have never even measured up to for a second. Is that Gerrard has had a spectacular life, a spectacular career. He's to all appearances a very, very happy human being at the top of his game. I don't feel sorry for him at all.
You don't? I feel a little bit like he's Moses who led the Israelites to the cusp of a promised land he could never enter. That's
just 4% like that or 5% like that. Just a little bit like that.
At Dartonator99, he said, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in Almost Famous answered the question of Stevie Gerrard's career. He said, great art is about guilt and longing. I think it's fitting that Steven Gerrard will leave on his own terms. And we're going to have 5 months of farewell. Yeah. Kind of wonders now.
Farewell to Crystal Palace. Farewell to West Bromwich Albion.
Farewell to
Chelsea.
Farewell
to Aston Villa.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very romantic.
Yeah.
But he's going out on his own terms.
Farewell to Burnley. Not so romantic.
Rather than having Farmer Brendan take him down to the river, pop him in a sack and let him drift away. How will he do in MLS, David?
You know, tough to say. I mean, it's tough to bet against really good Premier League players when they've come over here. Robbie Keane, of course, did fantastically. You know, Jermaine Defoe started really well and then it sort of drifted away from him in Toronto. I think he's such an intelligent and such a good all-around footballer and such a professional. I think he'll figure out a way to work. I'm a little worried about the climate in Los Angeles. I think it's going to be a little hot for him. Anybody who's seen him play international football over the summer has watched him struggle in heat in Los Angeles. Certainly over the spring, summer, early 4 months, it can get very hot.
He's not going to know what to do about the chill and the rain.
Yeah.
But he will connect a ton of Liverpool fans to the LA Galaxy.
Yeah.
Who have just probably guaranteed themselves a season of home sellouts. Every Chelsea, Manchester City and United fan on the West Coast will be lining up to sing the Steven Gerrard song. He slips on his effing arse. He gave it to Denver, but it's good for business. I think he's going to love LA. I think he'll love the anonymity that living in America offers a European football star. Who's going to play him in the movie biopic? He played himself in Being Liverpool, but not very convincingly.
There's only one person in American entertainment with his hairline, Rog, and that is Teresa Giudice from The Real Housewives of New Jersey. She has Steven Gerrard's hairline. So it could be her when she gets out from, whatever jail she's going to go to for alleged, it seems, convicted of tax evasion. Maybe her.
At Jay Graydon thinks Jeremy Renner.
Interesting.
Perfect. At Drew DeBorg, 12. I came up with an even better one in my mind, Christopher Walken.
Yeah, you know Vinnie Jones is going to audition, Rog.
But he won't get it because at JFF, CRMR came up with the winner, Idris Elba.
Oh, that's interesting.
All I know is Phil Collins will score it.
Yeah.
Against all odds, too. Mm-hmm. That was the soundtrack to many dry ice filled last dances. Phil were longing on the vomits for circuit to Liverpool. Just think about that song now, Dave. Because I imagine Phil Collins being in his beats, in Steven Gerrard's beats.
Yeah.
Take a look at me now, Steven Gerrard. How can I just let you walk away and let you leave without a trace? That song, that's foreshadowing.
God, I hope Brendan Rodgers doesn't listen to that on the way to training in his car. It'll break his heart.
He just listens to kind of positive self-affirmation. You are great, Brendan Rodgers, say his headphones. You're a good-looking man. People who think highly of you are good people.
You're good enough. You're talented enough. You're clever enough.
Your dad loves you. Yeah. He never said he did, but he loves you. He loves you. He never found the words to say it, but he'd be proud of you. Last question. He's proud of you.
Good signing for the LA Galaxy, you've got to say, Rog.
But is MLS an elephant's graveyard? Da-na-na, da-na-na.
No, I think it's great.
Agreed.
It's excellent.
Yep.
Excellent for LA Galaxy. Excellent for MLS.
We love elephants.
Yeah.
We're pro-elephant.
We're pro-elephants and pro-graveyards.
No.
Oh, I love a graveyard, Rog.
I love a graveyard. Can I tell you one thing, though?
We're both pro-elephants, and I'm pro-graveyard.
We've made that clear. But I've got to say, anyone who thinks that it's an elephant's graveyard does not understand how football's world tectonic plates constantly shift.
Yeah.
And the arrivals of players like Kaká.
Yeah.
And Stevie G.
Yeah.
And I believe players like Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Ibra, they'll all be coming here at the end of their careers. These are the growing pains to me, Dave, of a great league. Do you remember in the 1990s, Serie A? That's the Italian league for those who don't even know what it is anymore. It was the biggest league in the world.
Yeah.
And their older players who were discarded, spat out, spent, like Ruud Gullit, they'd come over to England to end their careers. They were brilliant. They dominate in England. They were crap in Italy. And now look, Serie A is a second tier league. The EPL is this dominant force. To me, these are the growing pains that will make MLS as big as it wants to be within 20 years.
I'm thinking the other analogy is it's a bit like television. Rog, we're living in a golden age of television drama because less movies are made. Movie stars who can't get movie roles anymore go over to television and go into these amazing, amazing dramas that are making this golden age of television drama. Who says that these won't make this the golden age of MLS. Why is it all about youth? Why is youth so much... I'm saying this as a 48-year-old bald man. Why is youth more interesting than older gentlemen?
So right
like
now,
us,
MLS, you're stars.
Yeah.
Very soon you'll be Showtime.
Yeah.
And soon you'll be HBO. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Netflix. Why can't MLS be Netflix, Rog? Talking of Netflix, Arsenal, Rog, inconsistency continues to plague, or as he would say, plague, Arsene Wenger's side after a draw and two wins to start the holiday stretch. They roll over and lose 2-0 to Southampton. 7 points, Rog, same as Chelsea.
Oh, Southampton, what strange magic, Davo. Yeah. When I went to Southampton, they lost 4 straight games.
Yep.
And then as soon, literally the second I finished editing the film with the great people at NBC Sports, they started to win again.
Yeah, is this just strange magic or you're just very bad luck?
Dave, even way, my friend, it makes me believe in phrenology and alchemy. Uh-huh. 10 points out of 4 holiday games for Southampton. And in that 2-0 win over Arsenal, that Arsenal-y Christmas, that Arsenal had 2 wins. Hope, we're back. Yeah. Southampton, shattered dreams. May have broken Southampton's hoodoo against teams considered to be in the elite. The honest truth is Arsenal had their chances in that game. Quick word on Southampton. Yeah. They, no team I have seen in the modern time have had players so constantly step up. Here it was Victor Wanyama who terrorised Arsenal's midfield with his intelligence and his physicality. And Sadio Mane, who scored in his last 3 Premier League appearances. And then that exquisite, physics-defying curler, albeit brain deficit, goalkeeper-aided. That goal was proper Arsenal. I mean, they're defending. It's just a never-ending catalogue of errors from an ever-changing cast of characters. Doesn't matter whether it's Debuchy, Koscielny, Szczęsny or Mertesacker. They seem to be taking it in turns to Benny Hill, David.
Yeah, but also in Southampton, Rog, they conceded 2 goals over the holiday period. That's less than anyone else in the Premier League. And to some extent, their success, as we both said earlier in the season, is built on their back four. It's built on their defence. It's built on their ability to like shut it down and shut down their opponents. And in the Premier League, if you don't concede goals, you can do very, very well.
Oh, look, the player I love watching this Christmas was Harrison Reed.
Yeah.
The 19-year-old midfielder who goes by the nickname Ray Donovan.
Yeah.
Because he just cleans it up on the field.
Oh, cleans it up like
When I was with Kruger, the chairman, Ralph Kruger, I was walking around the stadium and I just said to him, he's talking about, you know, the prospect of European football that they dream about. And I just kind of, I guess rather cheekily, I said, Ralph, where are you going to put the Real Madrid fans when they come for the Champions League games? And with no smile and without missing a beat, no irony, he goes, they will sit here. Like they're fully planning, Davo. But for Arsenal, 2 massive tests await. Stoke City, their bête noire, and then Manchester City. Alexis Sanchez, not scored in 6 league games. The Guardian's Amy Lawrence noted that he's played almost 2,400 minutes of football since the start of the season, more than he did for Barcelona in the whole of last year. Walcott's back. There's a rare luxury of options. The speed of Theo.
Theo. Alongside we're Theo's team now.
We're Alexis's team now. The fragile guile of Mesut Ozil. The well-intentioned hard charging of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. The meaty French forehead. An intricate hair design of Olivier Giroud. And the fear and self-doubt of England's Danny Welbeck, David.
Yeah. That's options. Be interesting. Interesting to see. Rog, I hate to finish this off by talking about your beloved Everton. A rocky holiday season, Rod, for Roberto Martinez. Everton did not earn a single point in 4 games. Losses to Hull, Stoke, Newcastle and the aforementioned Southampton have left them just 4 points above the relegation zone. Discuss.
We're sadder than Lady Edith.
Oh, that's sad.
Took her 7 minutes to cry in Downton Abbey Series 5. It's taken Everton a lot less. I think winter's coming, David. We're slowly morphing into Wigan Athletic. We're harder to watch than Chris Christie celebrating a touchdown in Jerry Jones's box. No clean sheet in 10 games. We haven't scored in 4 of the last 6. Lowest save percentage. We were bullied by Hull City. It was like watching a Todd Solondz movie. Roberto Martinez, welcome to the dollhouse, David. What has happened to him?
Well, it's tough. Conceded 33 goals, Rog. Only Queen's Park Rangers have conceded more in the Premier League, Rog. And, you know, critics of Roberto Martinez say, and they said the same for him when he was the manager of Wigan, that he prioritises attack over defence. And I think we're seeing some of that, frankly, going on at Everton.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched them all season, and right now Neil Young's The Needle and the Damage Done is actually less depressing to listen to than to watch an Everton game. And it is a huge amount of frustration being targeted at Roberto Martinez. He was such a suave hero last season. But now, teams know how to play us. His emphasis on passing out the back is seen as the core of everything that's gone wrong. You just have to wait for an Everton defender to cough the ball up and give you a chance on goal. Ross Barkley has been a repeat offender. He's turned into a flailing colt, straining to impress, but really only able to turn the ball over to an opposition. And Everton, in words Zidane used to describe the French World Cup team in 2010, he said they only have two problems. One is attacking, the other is defending. The worst part, David, is we have no new ideas. There's no sense we can turn the tide. We're just repeating the same old mistakes over and over. I think Martinez needs to move to Tweed.
Yeah, well, definitely. 29 goals scored, though, Rog. They're scoring plenty of goals to go and do anything.
Oh, you're
and
being
you,
nice.
You think that they're going to figure a way to go and
you're being nice.
Up
I've got to say,
at
Philip Spiegel is one of many GFOPs who've reached out to me with this tweet. I'm a new EPL and Everton fan. Can you explain relegation to me?
Oh, no.
I've got to tell you, I mean, for me right now, I feel like the frustration of Arsenal fans plus the misery of Spurs supporters times by the confusion of Rene Zellweger aficionados, that's what it means to be an Evertonian this season. Have I done a terrible thing, David? Have I done a terrible, terrible thing?
Converting Americans to Everton Football
Hundreds
Club.
Hundreds of Americans every game will tweet me to tell me they became an Everton fan because of me and or Timmy Howard. And why? Why have I done a terrible thing?
Well, you've convinced just as many people not to support Chelsea, who you basically view as everything that is dark and evil and wrong in
Cossacks.
The world. So you've done some good, Rog, I think, by your own laws of nature.
So to Everton fans, new Everton, I say stay the course.
Yeah.
It's good character building stuff that sets you up for life.
The championship can be very enjoyable, Rog.
Here's how I deal with it. Mm-hmm. There's an animal called an Alaskan tree frog.
Yeah.
It freezes
is
solid.
Is this like that spider down in Brazil?
No, this is better. Okay. This is good for football.
Okay, good.
It freezes solid in winter.
Yeah.
Its heart stops.
Yeah.
And then in spring, it thaws out and then just merrily hops off the tree branch.
Good.
That's my strategy for the rest of the season.
It is. Borrowed from nature.
Yep.
I like it.
By the way, we just found out the real reason for Everton being crap. It's not the EuroLeague, Roberto Martinez, injuries or aging.
Yeah.
It's a bloody Justin Bieber wore an Everton jersey in a football tournament in Turks and Caicos.
Why did he do that?
As any US sports fan knows, when Bieber supports your team, their fortunes swiftly plummet.
Yeah.
I'm angry.
And?
I keep a short list of people I would never like to see in an Everton jersey.
Yeah.
Bieber comes in just between Goebbels and Himmler.
Uh-huh.
And two places below Mick Jagger.
Well, where's John Terry on that list?
Oh, David. Honestly. Worse than seeing Bieber defile the Everton jersey is the fact that everyone, and I mean everyone, kept sending it to me over Twitter. For
I didn't.
3 days straight. My life has been like that acid flashback scene in Jacob's Ladder, the movie. It was just a kaleidoscopic, psychedelic hell.
First of all, you had to deal with that nose picker who wiped his nose pick in that poor woman's hair. And now you've got to deal with Bieber wearing an Everton jersey, Rog. God. It's all going wrong. That's actually worse than Everton losing all these games, Rog. Very difficult.
It's been hard, David, but not as hard as it has been for Palace and West Brom, Frank.
Yeah, talking of relegation, Rog, two teams mired in the battle to stay up have made managerial changes in hopes of changing their fortunes. West Brom sacked Alan Irvine, Rog, and replaced him with Tony Pulis. Good to see him back. Rog, fashion needs Tony Pulis back in the Premier League. And Pulis' former club, Crystal Palace, meanwhile fired Neil Warnock. Rog, Mrs.
Yep.
Doubtfire, Missing and replaced him...
The mum from The Sopranos.
And replaced him with former Newcastle manager, Alan Pardew.
That one was weird. We lost two friends over the holidays. I did love Neil Warnock. I loved the way he pulled up his tracksuit bottoms over his belly button.
Yeah.
I found that very reassuring.
Yeah.
Three different managers, Pulis, Warnock and Keith Millen, have led Palace over their last 20 Premier League games. We used to look at Italy's Serie A as a place where managers got the hook.
Yeah.
And
Or Chelsea.
I mean, it's crazy. Now, the economic reality of Premier League football means a coach is permanently in the hot seat. Alan Irvine, off he pops. Tony Pulis, the relegation whisperer. He's never had a team. go down. No-nonsense football now for West Brom from a no-nonsense man summed up by the 2009 headbutt he landed on one of his own players, James Beattie, while both men were naked in the showers. The one I find really odd, Dave, is Sack Pardew electing to leave Newcastle for Crystal Palace.
Yeah. Why?
I mean, Rory Smith of The Times made a great point that Newcastle fans, they hated Pardew.
Yeah.
Hated him. They hated him because what fans want from a football team, aspirations or pretensions of glory, and what the board wants, in Newcastle's case, just keep coming up middling, just keep up middling, are two very different things. And fans want pursuit of trophies. Newcastle love the boredom of kind of mid-table ennui.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter who really takes over. And I feel for Newcastle fans, Remy Gard, Dick Advocaat, Steve McLaren, not much is going to change. But how will he do at Palace? He's got to get them scoring.
Yeah. Former Palace player, of course. Not exactly a Palace legend, but a former Palace player has some affection for the club. And Palace have some good players. They've definitely played some very good football over the last two seasons, despite their current league position. And I think he's proven, certainly a guy who can handle adversity. Over the last few months at Newcastle, he's bounced back, Rog. We love bounce back ability.
It's still weird to see a man loathed by supporters cozying up to his fans in Crystal Palace, even saluting them. It's like seeing Dustin Diamond from Saved by the Bell turn from just like a lovely thespian into a knife-wielding bar brawler. There's hidden skills in all of us, Dave. The Rob Lowe DirecTV ads have made me sure of that.
Yeah. Newcastle, Rog, we should say, have yet to name Pardew's replacement. No idea who it's going to be.
We should have a competition.
Yeah, exactly. Elect.
We'll give an Xbox and the job to the winner.
Yeah, if you get it right. Rog, how do you handicap the race at the bottom of the table?
It's tasty.
Yeah.
Leicester and Burnley do not say die.
Yeah.
They're like an audition to see which Premier League team will play Glenn Close in a remake of Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
Leicester, first win in over 3 months against halitosis. They had the will to drag themselves back into the game against Liverpool from a 2-0 whole courtesy of one of the worst penalty decisions of all time. Wes Morgan took the ball to the face. The ref says handball, a rare case of double knot in the face. And then there's Burnley, George Boyd and Danny Ings. I love Boyd. He's like super creepy Radamel Falcao. And Ings, what's interesting, Dave, is both the top and the bottom of the table are going to be determined, I think, by the transfer window, which has just opened. Traditionally, the big clubs don't do much business over the next month. City, United and Chelsea rarely buy big in the winter because the prices are extortionate. But it's when the relegation challenge clubs seek to shuffle and bolster the dying embers of their squads. But Manchester City, Dave, going after Wilfred Bony, the goal scorer, who should be known as the space maker.
Yeah.
I think the transfer window is going to tell us all.
Yeah, without a doubt, Rog. Joining us now on the pod, Rog, well, actually, joining you on the pod, our guest,
part bard, part musician, whose lyrics cover white-collar crime, middle-aged sex, martial artists, track stars, Mike Piazza, priests, bookworms and awkward teenagers, his band, Belle and Sebastian, is a singular cult and fiercely loved group, a little bit like the Everton of pop music. Their upcoming album, Girls in Peacetime Want to Dance, I've been listening to it all week. It comes out January 20th on Matador Records, with a US tour soon to be announced this spring. Ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you a man who may love Molly Ringwald even more than I do, welcome to the pod, Mr. Stuart Murdoch.
Hi, everyone. Listen, I'm chuffed that you described us as the Everton of pop, because at least that would put us in the Premier League.
Oh, undoubtedly in the Premier League. Question is, whether you're going to stay there this season, Stuart? That's the big question. Stuart, I've got to say, I'm so happy to have you. The song, There's Too Much Love to Go Around, When I Come to Blows, When I'm Numbering My Foes, Just Hope You're on My Side, My Dear, is how I try and approach life. But so many of your songs are musical sugar kind of coated misanthropy, which I love. I love sugar coated misanthropy. As an Everton fan, which I am, would you recommend that as a way to go through life?
Oh, I don't know, actually. The misanthropy is more elegantly handled by the likes of Morrissey. It's something that I delve in less and less, but you know, if it works for you, then use it.
You are a Scottish gentleman, a proud Scottish gentleman. To Americans, most of us here know about Scotland from, I'm sad to say, Braveheart movies at worst, or the speech in Train Spotting, with the lowest of the low, the scum of the earth, the most wretched, servile, miserable, pathetic trash that ever crapped into creation. I mean, both are, you could say, somewhat skewed takes. How would you describe modern Scotland to the American imagination?
Hey, listen, modern Scotland's okay. You know, just imagine Vermont with a bit more tartan, and instead of maple syrup, we've got jam.
Vermont plus tartan plus tweed equals, some would say, heaven.
Heaven, there you go. You know, it's a beautiful country. We've got the highlands and all that beautiful lochs and mountains, but we've also got two great cities, Edinburgh and Glasgow. Well, actually, there's a few more great cities as well.
Yeah, don't leave out Dumbarton. But you tweeted recently, some mornings in the 70s, we used to stare at the streetlights until the moment they went out. That's how much there was to do. I've got to say, when I read it, I grew up in Liverpool. Few tweets took me back to my childhood better. Well, give us a sense of that time and place.
Well, that was the 70s in Britain was a kind of rough time, you know, because it was all about there was the oil crisis. And so we had this three-day week, which seems unbelievable now, but people were only allowed to work for 3 days. And on those other 2 days, we had to put out all the lights and light candles to light the place, because we were saving electricity. So it was certainly, you know, people were really feeling the end of the British Empire in a big way.
I mean, they weren't wrong to some degree, but football was such a bright light in that time. I mean, I can remember 1977, Scotland 2, England 1, the Scottish manager Ali McLeod coming down saying, "I don't dislike the English, I hate their guts." I mean, they beat us at Wembley, you tore the goalpost down. Everyone thought you were going to win the World Cup in 1978, but you were home before your postcards. Can you talk about the role Scottish football plays in the nation's psyche?
Well, nobody thought that Scotland were going to win the World Cup more than I did. And let's put it in perspective a little bit. Scotland were a terrific team at the time. Fabulous. We were actually, you know, we did end up going to Argentina. We did end up beating the Dutch when we actually started to play good football. So, you know, we did come in 12th place or something like that. I think that was the official. You know, so we didn't do too bad overall, but I did believe we were going to win it. And actually, Ali McLeod used to, I wrote a letter to him at the time, and because I just thought he was the greatest living Scotsman, and I asked for his autograph. I didn't hear back from him. And then funnily enough, after the World Cup, when his star had fallen, he used to drive me to football matches, because I was in his son's boys club. I was sat in the back of the car, and I used to think you were a god, and now you're just driving me to a boys football match.
That's possibly in the top 10 of most British stories of all time. But I mean, you've got Euro 2016, Scotland very much in the hunt, Poland, Germany, and Ireland also chasing the places in that group. What would it do for Scotland's identity if they made a major tournament?
I'm not so sure about Scottish identity, but it would just be good for the population, because we do take it seriously. It's been so long since we made a major competition that people have actually got used to not going. But it would just give us a boost. It would be a feel-good factor in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I remember 1978 World Cup and just the massive tartan army going over there to Argentina. There was a story, perhaps apocryphal, but I choose to believe it, that some Scotsmen were so desperate to get there that some even requisitioned an old submarine to get over there to Argentina. But there's something about reveling in the kind of losing identity that they've taken. You're a fan of a particular local club. And when I was looking them up and seeing how their fortunes have fared since I last looked into Scottish football, Ayr United, Stuart.
Yes.
Third tier of Scottish football.
The third tier and holding up, you know, holding up the bottom of the third tier. we've had a disastrous run, but we just appointed, just a couple of days ago, we appointed a new manager, Ian McCall, so hopefully that should bring a change in our fortunes. We started the season well, and we were top, I think, for a week or so, and now we're second bottom.
I mean, Ayr United, third tier, probably most well-known as Sir Alex Ferguson's last club as a player. They've got one of the most beautiful nicknames in football, the Honest Men.
The Honest Men, that's from the Robert Burns poem, "A Never a Town Surpasses
for Honest Men and Bonnie Lasses.
And so it is. I remember getting, you know, when I had football cards when I was a wee boy and used to read the information on the back and reading that Ayr's nickname was the Honest Men, and I thought that was so odd. I thought that was so strange, but I like it now.
You're a football player yourself. I read that you said, "I use football as a barometer for my health." Your band have a team. You say it's a slacker game, a waster's game, but I think we could hold our own in a Sunday league. What kind of game have you got?
Well, I must admit, that was, I think probably I wrote that a while ago. My knees have since given up, and so I'm on a hiatus from football. I want to get back some point. But there was I used to play on a Tuesday and a Thursday, and the Tuesday game was a slacker game because that was in the afternoon, and there was all these guys that didn't have proper jobs.
Like Stephen Naismith.
I don't think he ever played in our game, but, you know, guys that worked in bars and guys that were in bands. So there was a lot of, Stephen from a band called Biff played in the game. The guys from Teenage Fan Club used to come along. The guys from Snow Patrol used to come along when they were still in Glasgow. And, we'd have a really good kick about.
Did you ever play any of the American bands? I'd love to see you confront the ticky-tacka of Sleater Kinney.
I'd love to play Sleater Kinney. A beautiful thing about playing soccer in America is that the women get involved. And I remember playing a pickup game in Golden Gate Park, where we just sort of asked people to come along and play. And I was so delighted that at least half the people there were women, and that they played really, you know, they were playing great. And it was just such a beautiful day.
Yeah, you're going to be playing Coachella this year. Maybe, I think people would honestly pay just to watch Bell and Sebastian take on Sleater Kinney and the old football pitch. I know I will. But when you hear soccer, you put aside. You wrote one of the most beautiful songs about baseball. At PD Butterworth, one of our listeners said, "Piazza, New York catcher, the perfect song about baseball, love and longing. Why Stuart baseball and not football?"
No, it's a good question, because I've never really written a song. Sometimes it's easier to write about something that is exotic, and when you come new to something. And I remember my friend Nate taking me, to see the Mets for the first time at Shea Stadium. I think around about 99 or 2000, and it's the all-American pastime, and it's more than just a game. It's a chance to see America, you know, at play. It's a chance to eavesdrop on families, and it's such a great place to hang out. So I think I was inspired just by the whole thing.
I love it too. I think it's like chess with chewing tobacco, watching modern baseball. But Mike Piazza, about minutes ago, was just denied a place in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So I imagine him somewhere in his bedroom flicking his light switch on and off while listening to Piazza, New York catcher, to ail his breaking heart. Last question for you. One thing, I love you for many reasons, but one is that in your biography, you say you sold bacon door to door. I've always wanted to interview a bacon salesman. We've got a lot of young listeners, Can you give any of them who harbour dreams of being a bacon salesman some career advice?
Well, listen, do you know the weird thing? I know this sounds totally crazy, but when I was, when I was 14 and 15 and doing my bacon salesman, I was, not only bacon, but other dairy produce as well, cheese and cream. And I had a dream. And my dream was that, because I was of going to the ultimate capitalist society, i.e. America, and selling bacon door-to-door in America. I really thought I was going to turn up in New York with a suitcase full of bacon samples, and I was going to open up, you know, whole new areas to this superb bacon produce.
Oh, you sound just like Frank Lampard when we met him. He said it was his dream to turn up in New York with a suitcase full of bacon samples. It didn't happen for him. Sadly, it didn't happen for you. But there is something rather wonderful that you've stayed there, and you truly are the embodiment, I think, of everything that is great and wonderful about Scotland. We cannot wait for you and the band to tour America in the wake of the album. Girls in Peacetime, Want to Dance. It's a great thrill to have you on the pod. Thanks so much, Stuart Murdoch.
Thanks, Roger.
He's more than a pop musician, David. He's a bard, a poet, and a gent.
And a Scotsman, Rog, and a Scotsman. Okay, on to the Ravens. Our first Raven comes via our subreddit, Rog. Meninblazers.reddit.com, which now has a place to submit Ravens. This is from user PMMeFoodPornPLZ.
Is that really his name?
It's user...
Is that a real name? That is right out of Reddit.
Yeah.
I don't know what that name is, but it's right out of Reddit.
I suppose PLZ is actually food porn, please, I'd say, Rog. What coach and player do you think hammered up most for the cameras? They know the eyes of the world are upon them, and they milk it thusly. I mean, the first person that comes to mind for me is Jose Mourinho. He always knows that he's being watched, and he's always making a face, and he's always performing.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Allardyce, he always hams it up. Mm-hmm. Literally, I think his body's 73% made of ham. One thing actually, Louis van Gaal, thinking about this, it's amazing to me how little he actually moves.
He's the opposite during of the game, hamming it up.
He's like the Arctic frog,
anti-ham.
He's like a pale-throated sloth that sits yet barely breathes in a race car seat in the stands. No matter what's going on, he doesn't communicate. It's a very interesting decision he has made, and very different to any other manager. You're Mourinho for me too, David.
Yeah.
And I thought about that at the end of the game against Spurs.
Uh-huh.
He'd been seething for the second half. And then, you see, right at the end, he went over, the game was still going on. He wanted to concede graciously defeat, which meant for him to go over to Pochettino while the game was going on and indulge in some neck-grabbing power moves. And then he decided he knew the camera was on him and would stay on him away from the game. So he went down the whole line of Spurs coaches, shaking the hands slowly of each one, as if he was trying to say, I am dignified in defeat. I am dignified in defeat. Yeah, because he knew his actions were like taking everything off the game, and it all felt premeditated and completely controlling. The net effect, it just made him seem like an even bigger d***.
Well, he's trying to figure out how to not concede two goals in second half injury time the way he did in the first half, Rog.
There's that English phrase that's used often in England, you don't hear it so much in America, he proper gets on my tits.
Yeah.
Oh, that proper got my
I think there's a reason you don't hear it that much in America. Rog, players. Can you think of any players who grabbed the headlines? Because that was the question, players and managers.
The only player who comes to mind was Luis Suarez, who always gave you the incredible reaction shot no matter
great
what had
call.
Happened. I mean, Balotelli gives you the reaction shot, but there's never any action before the reaction shot.
It's a reaction to no action whatsoever. A re-shot.
Other than that, Tony Hibbert, to me, is like, he's not...
The anti-ham. He's anti-ham.
He's not an anti-ham. He's more like the kind of John C. Reilly's. He's like the great character actor that you see in lots of movies and you're not quite sure who he is, but you know you like him every role he plays.
Yeah, I'd have to say that John Terry is a little bit of a ham up for the cameras. He's the sort of not bothered supremo. I'm always like, not bothered. Am I bothered? No, I'm not bothered. I'm not bothered. He's always there. Okay, this is the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Saka, Scribe, Raven of the Week. It's Laurie Lark from Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, Laurie, welcome.
A raven from a lark, Roger.
I like her name more than the gentleman from the Reddit.
That's very true. I cannot tell you how happy I felt instinctively when Gedeon Zelalem announced he was becoming an American citizen. Every time he turned out for the German under 15, under 16 and under 17 levels, while you were watching closely, the Marylander felt like he was drifting away from us. But I was surprised by the instant backlash to his announcement on social media from those eager to point out that the 17-year-old Arsenal youth teamer may turn out to be a bust. This from many of the same people who constantly berate US soccer for losing the likes of Giuseppe Rossi to Italy, Nevin Subotic to Serbia, and Vedad Ibisevic to Bosnia. Please can you advise us what emotions we are legally allowed to feel in this time of wheels within wheels, national confusion, courage, Laurie.
I once had to interview Ibisevic on national television after a Bosnia game.
Yeah.
Live.
Yeah.
On television, and I was so scared I'd get his name wrong. Mm-hmm. I kept saying into the microphone as
Fortunately, you were not on Bosnian national television.
Oh, English is better than mine, thank God. What a great question, Dave. I mean, Gedeon Zelalem, a remarkable bloke. Another German trout has left the German trout farm, Davo.
Yes. Is that how you feel about him? He's one of many German trite, as my father would say.
I mean, that's what the Germans think about it. It's always big news in America, and in Germany, they barely even kind of blink.
He's another one.
I've not seen that much of Zelalem. His Arsenal games and his appearances have been tantalisingly brief. He's not a powerful gent. He's more an intelligent, kind of tactically savvy, technical midfielder. The English papers, when they've done profiles on him, which have been quite adoring, they've hailed him as the next Fabregas, the next Xavi, and the next Zidane. I'd settle for him being the next Tabaré Moss, Davo.
Yeah.
And his announcement, it was met with an odd mix of unbridled delight for many fans, as I think it should do, and an almost kind of like backlash eye-rolling for many journalists eager to squelch out that kind of innocent delight. I guess a Pavlovian reaction caused by one too many Freddie Adus, Teal Bunbury's, Juan Aguadellos and Breck Shays.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some truth to the fact that you have to see him prove himself at the senior level. And, you know, we talked earlier about Harry Kane. He's a player who actually didn't do very well at junior level and is now starting to prove himself temporarily at the senior level. And I think that what's positive, though, is that this is another case where US soccer has won a battle for a coveted signature. And that is entirely, entirely a positive. And so whether it's Gedeon Zelalem or one of the next five people who we managed to convert, who we managed to turn, I think that's very good. It's very, very
Klinsmann,
good sign.
Has been courting him since he became coach, literally. There was talk of Zelalem joining the US team before the last World Cup. And Jürgen really hoped he would sign on then.
By the way, it does occur to me that I heard Jürgen Löw at the pool when he was right behind me, screaming into his phone. This was a few days ago. 99999. It was probably about getting Zelalem.
And you've just broken some news.
You just broken some news. Jürgen Löw furious at hotel pool about loss of Gedeon Zelalem.
Then again, Dave,
the
service around the pool you said wasn't so good.
Yeah. Maybe it was unhappy that he'd lost his cell phone connection.
Maybe.
Yeah.
There was talk about Zelalem joining the team before the World Cup. You look at this, Fabian Johnson, Julian Green, John Brooks, great American, Aaron Johansson, now Zelalem. No matter what you think of Jürgen, his recruiting has been awesome. I also want to thank Republican representative for Texas 21st Congressional District, Lamar Smith, for sponsoring the Child Citizenship Act of 2000, which was what Zelalem used to become a naturalized citizen.
Wow.
Able to play for the US. Lamar Smith, I don't know anything else about you other than that, but we love you. Ryan Peterson, the GFOP, said it's great Zelalem is an American. As an unfortunate result, his ball skills have immediately worsened. On the bright side, he suddenly gained immeasurable grit, metal, and steel. And at Blue 94 Trooper tweeted us to say, at Men in Blazers, the US men's national team will soon be even more German than the British royal family.
that's pretty German, let's face it. Your weekend looks like this, Rog. Crystal Palace versus Tottenham. Resurgent Tottenham.
To your Spurs.
Yeah. That's 12:30 p.m. Saturday on the NBC network. On Sunday, Arsenal play Stoke, 8:30 a.m. Rog, and Manchester United versus Southampton at 11 a.m. that day.
City against Everton.
Yeah, both Sunday games are on NBC Sports Network. Rog, NBCSN. Many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page, and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the store this week, Rog?
A book.
Yeah.
One I've talked about before, but I finally read over the vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, Louis, by Hugo Borst, a Dutch journalist who travels around Holland in an attempt to understand Louis van Gaal's mentality.
Huh.
And he interviews other journalists, a spin doctor, a psychiatrist. It is a magical insight into Dutch culture and the blood sport that Dutch football really, I mean, it's unbelievably, obsessively full of conflict. And it contains some wonderful anecdotes about Van Gaal, especially in his early years as a young kind of manager coming through and a wonderfully, always beautifully arrogant man.
I've been doing a lot of cooking over the holiday, Rog. Getting quite into cooking. I don't know what's happening. It's like, should be gardening at my age, but it's actually cooking that's happening to me. And I found some fantastic pots in sapphire blue made by Staub, and I enjoy Staub. That may be what Yogi Love was screaming, 999 Staub by the pool. Staub? I believe they may be German or Austrian or potentially Swiss, but heartily recommend the Staub pots. They're currently on sale. You might find some of those at Amazon.
They're the Gedeon's LLMs of cookery and high cuisine.
Yeah, they're going to. Jürgen Klinsmann is chasing them down as we speak. Other way to connect to us, Rog, meninblazers.wikispaces.com/... That's a wonder of the modern world, Rog, our wiki spaces. Meninblazers.com, that's where we post everything we're doing, including a place there you can sign up for the newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers. On Instagram, that's Men in Blazers. Like us on Facebook, Rog. We've got a subreddit. We've already talked about that enough today, I believe. Meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs, Akshay, Calvin, and Alex have joined the band, Rog. We now have a Spotify account, Rog. Search men_in_blazers. It has our very first Men in Blazers mixtape, which is a collection of songs near and dear to us. Do you want to read out what the songs are, Rog?
No, they should go and look. They're beautiful. I listened to it over the holidays a couple of times. I tried to run to it, but I run really fast when yours come on, and then it's hard to run to the ones that they just make me sob.
Particularly Tracy Chapman, Rog. You can always email us, meninblazers@gmail.com. Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Although it is quite wintry, you might want to send an email also.
Maybe an Arctic frog.
Yeah, could be an Arctic frog. We'd love to see an Arctic frog up here in the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Matombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size the day.
Is that your analysis?
Booyah.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davey.
Love you, Rog.
It's good to be back.
To tweet.